Welcome back, everybody, to another exciting edition of the Unite podcast. I am the lesser half of the podcasting hosting tandem, Jonathan Mayo.
Oh, never. He's the legend, actually. And I am Ashley Comans, and it's good to be back with you all for another episode.
Post-Thanksgiving, different this year.
So different. It just felt like going to dinner to my mother-in-law's. How about you?
Yeah, we were here. We had the moms in our house, and they've kind of been part of our household, and mm-hmm. that's pretty much been it. But Thanksgiving's history is troubled at best, but mm-hmm. it is a time to definitely be grateful for the things we have, especially these days. I think it is always a good time to count your blessings. You don't need a day on the calendar to do that.
I agree. And I think with everything that we have been through this year, my wish is that folks, as best they could just take it easy, because, you know, it's a relentless world out here in the year of 2020. As we wrap up this long year, it feels like it was 10 years.
Yeah, self-care. I feel like we talk about that a lot of time, but it's tough, right? There's always something to work on and to talk about. And I'm going to use that as a absolutely terrible segue to bring our guest and to talk about all the things.
I know, this is a good one. I feel like we are finally, have we had almost all of our endorsed candidates on our episode? Are we missing anyone? There's a few, maybe there's one or two.
I think we're getting through. We've gone through all them, and it's very funny. We're very happy to have Liv Bennett, County Council member, joining us. Liv.
Yes. Hi, Liv.
Hi, Liv. And it's funny because when we were talking about it, and Ashley was like, yeah, we haven't had Liv on yet. I'm like, what? Like, in my head, we'd had you on already. And that interview went great, by the way. It was really, really good.
It did.
Yeah. You were on fire that day, so no pressure. We are very excited actually to have you on, to talk about things that you're working on in County Council, to continue to teach people about County Council. Mm-hmm. We had your, I don't want to say partner in crime, your dynamic duo.
The partner in crime.
Yeah.
Team Bethany.
Yeah.
All day.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had Bethany on, and that was kind of like, We'll say that was like the introductory course. That was 101 to County Council. And this is now we're moving up to like the master's level course. So, it's one of those things that I think a lot of people didn't know County Council was a thing. And I think people are still trying to understand what County Council does and what the breadth of it can be. And it sounds to me, Liv, that like you're figuring that out too. And that, I mean, to me, that's exciting. Mm-hmm. So just talk a little bit about kind of getting your feet under you and getting a sense of how things work and where you can kind of push the envelope a little bit.
Yeah, I am still trying to figure this out. So sometimes I feel like I'm trying to build the plane as I'm flying and just praying that I don't crash. So it's a very interesting ride here, especially, no one ever thought that while we were running for office that we would have a worldwide pandemic. So like that really like is a crash course, like sink or swim, especially when you have no national leadership. So, but I'll digress. Yeah. But yeah, so, figuring out, the purview of County Council, I think a lot of that is still up in the air. Like even within our own rank, our own body, we don't necessarily agree what the role of County Council is. We have folks that believe that it's their role to just concentrate on motions and do proclamations and certifications all day, every meeting. And then we have folks like myself and Bethany who believe that we're a legislative body and we should be legislating some things. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes we're met with opposition of, that's not in our wheelhouse. That's not in our purview. And we're like, why isn't it? Like every other legislative body legislates, why not us? So it's a very interesting tension that goes on with the folks. Because we have some very, County Council is not an old body. Summer and I were having a conversation one day and like she really reminded me the history of the PA state legislature. Like, it was one of the first to be a legislative branch of the new world, right? Like, Pennsylvania was one of the original colonies. So like, the history of the state legislature is expansive, and it goes, I mean, Benjamin Franklin, I want to say, is hanging in the halls there, but that's not the same at county council. County council was only erected in the 90s. So it's not that old of a body. And so I think that gives us a lot of leverage and leeway to kind of shape and form it into what we think it should be and what it says in the charter, mm-hmm. and actually live up what the charter gives us authority to do. So, you know, walking that path and chartering that territory is kind of exciting, scary, and annoying all at the same time. So
I'm glad that you brought that up again, because that part about when county council was formed was that on our Bethany episode. We did like a whole
quiz.
Yeah, we had a quiz, and when we talked about that, I think that was the one on that episode that I didn't know, and I was like, oh my gosh, was it what, 99, 2000?
Yes, not that old. It's about 20 something years me. Old.
And you know, I'm a youngin', as the old folks like tell me. So
I will never ever call you a youngin'.
I was out of high school when this thing was developed. So that tells you, you know, figure that out.
Yep, it's still new, but I think that's the, like you said, that's the good part of, you know, really figuring out as a county. When we have these folks that are elected, because it's not like they're appointed, it's not like it's a body of folks who just applied for a job. Like, no, you put your name on a ballot and people voted you to serve. And so that's what should be expected. And so to share with folks listening, like, you know, we need to be putting a little bit more pressure on our county council folks, because, you know, they're not fully utilizing their role, the body, I should say, because individually you have good folks, but the body as a whole isn't ultimately working to its fullest extent and exactly. being as productive and effective that as it could be. So I think that's really important. And, you know, there's a lot that's been happening over, I feel like over this past year through this pandemic, you know, thankful for you and Liv being so vocal about what's happening. But, you know, you all were able to recently pass some legislation. So you all, was it the Crown? Did you all call it the Crown Act too?
It was kind of the Crown Act, but not exactly, because the Crown Act is a very, I know you know, Ashley, because you're very good friends with Summer, but it's a very specific language that sponsor of the Crown Act is actually working with legislatures to craft that language specifically for the Crown Act. So ours was not that, because we already had anti-discrimination legislation that had passed in, I want to say, 2018. So ours was really an amendment hairstyles to that already existing discriminatory bill that we already had in place. It basically added another category of something you can't discriminate, race, sex, religion. Now hairstyles is in there too. Well,
and what was so interesting, you know, for me, although folks can't see us clearly on this recording, but, you know, I'm one to always rock a fro, you know, you've got your twist, and, you know, the fact that even, you know, I think we need to have that part of the conversation of there was some convincing that needed to happen for this to even be done. And, you know,
there was a lot of convincing that had to be done. That bill sat in committee. I want to say we had two or three committee meetings before we were able to get that out and back up to the main council for a full vote. Like you said, there was a lot of convincing, a lot of education. Mm-hmm. Because I was doing this along with Juneteenth, so the conversations were, you know, the history of independence in America. Like, hey, guys, just do the math. July 4th, 1776 comes well before June 19th, 1865. So you figure that out, right? Mm-hmm. And so just having these really real conversations with members of council and educating them, because these are things that they don't know. And I can't fault them for that. Our school systems don't teach this stuff. Mm-hmm. So why would they know it unless somebody is intentionally giving them this information and making them aware on why these things were important? But specifically to the hair legislation, I was able to like kind of walk across the bridge or work across the aisle, because hair is not just a Black thing. Like, there are other demographics that have hair and have hair, maybe have felt like they needed to tame their hair, quote unquote, to fit into the norm of society. Yep. Jewish folks typically have very curly hair and they may have felt pressured. And I know my daughter had a Jewish, I love my daughter's doctor's hair. She had a Jewish doctor and her hair was really curly and thick and it was beautiful. But if you're talking about assimilation, and that's what we know we often are moving towards as a society oftentimes, then that person with that curly hair may have felt like they needed to straighten it to be accepted or get a job or mm-hmm. be accepted in education or whatever pathway they were trying to accomplish. So it's not just a Black thing. And even the chair of the committee, Nick Fatulis, when we had a conversation about that, he actually sent me a text message with a picture of him with his big fro from when he was back in the day and had, you know, a fro back in whatever, I don't want to date him, so I'm not going to guess what year, but, but, you know, it really helped to bring along, like, you're right, Liv, that's not just a Black issue, it's an everybody issue. Anybody that doesn't have straight hair is may be prone to being discriminated against in one way, shape, or another. So I appreciate the opportunities to have those conversations, because we're never going to move forward unless we start having these conversations. So
it's a good entree point. I will say, for the record, by the way, I was a Jew who used to have a ton of hair.
See?
I did. No, we call them Jew fros, by the way. Yeah, and it drove me crazy. Mm-hmm. Drove me crazy. But
I've got some Italian friends with some really, really thick hair too.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good, because I think you can find common ground on this issue, even if it's really hoping to help end a certain kind of discrimination. And I'm glad that you felt that it was, you know, just because people weren't educated and it wasn't willful ignorance, you know, because I think that's where that line is often blurred, right? Yeah. You know, people don't know because they don't want to know, or they don't care to learn. Mm-hmm. I think in this case, I'm hoping you're right, and I'm glad that it was, you know, was able to be moved forward. You know, we always want bold progress, and sometimes small incremental progress is the way to get to there. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I like that.
I'll send you, by the way, I'll send you both pictures of me back from my high school days. So just because I know you're looking at me. We record this on Zoom and it's video. You won't see the video, obviously, but people who don't know me, I couldn't grow hair on the top of my head if someone put a gun to it. So, but way back when, I mean, really, like, did you guys ever see the movie Fletch? Old Chevy Chase movie? No? Mm-hmm. There's a whole scene where he dreams of playing for the Lakers, and he's like Fletch, 6'2", but 6'5", with the afro, and he just has like the big. And my hair was like that, and I used it to my advantage when I was a basketball.
Put it next to my Councilman Fatulis picture, because his fro was like.
Yeah.
And he shared a story. He remembered playing sports, and being told that they couldn't wear their hair in certain types of ways in order to play sports. So, it was very meeting people, like the shared experience, like, oh, I do remember. And yes, we may not have called it discrimination back then, but that was absolutely discrimination.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it's good to find that common ground. I know that obviously was not the only piece of legislation that's been passed. You know, there's a lot of things going on, has gone on, continue to go on. Tell us a little bit about the eviction moratorium. Because that's, you know, especially in absence of any larger help from the federal government on, you know, and on down in terms of getting people help that they need right now. It's a small, you know, it's not a small thing. I don't mean to make it seem like a small thing, but in terms of the amount of help that is needed for folks, it's just one piece of that. Mm-hmm. But talk a little bit about, you know, about what that moratorium does in terms of helping people within the county.
So, we did, we introduced a moratorium. Previously we did a motion at the beginning of the year, urging the courts or whoever, we didn't care, courts, CDC, the president, we don't care, just whoever wants to do it, to do an eviction moratorium. And we put it out to the end of this year. And so knowing that that is expiring, we introduced another motion to extend that moratorium out to October of 2021. And the reason, countless reasons, obviously, like if our numbers are going up, we're under a stay-at-home advisory right now, that could turn to an order at any given moment if we don't decide to find our senses and hunker down and get these numbers down, which doesn't seem like anybody's buying into trying to do that. So you know, we can't exacerbate one public health crisis with another public health crisis called evictions. So if we don't have folks, give folks the ability to stay in their shelter, to stay sheltered in place, we're having kids doing school from home. How are they going to do school from home if they don't have a home to school from? So like these things that we're really bare bottom things that we're trying to hold on to keep a semblance of normalcy in our society require folks to have some shelter to be able to do these things. So that was the most, you know, pressing reason on why we wanted to make sure that those folks are protected. But also, you know, we know people are out of jobs. We know that we've gotten one stimulus, and that was in April. Folks don't know how they're going to be paying their bills. Like we really are, as a government, I mean, my belief of government is that we should be doing as much as possible to alleviate the burdens of our constituents and not, you know, adding on. So if that was helping or being able to be done by doing an eviction moratorium, then we're going to do that. And how we got the October date, because that's always the question I'm gonna ask, is because I also sit at the, I'm not sure if you heard about this table, but they're now getting some attention, the Black Equity COVID table, mm-hmm. That was erected through PBEOC. And so I sit at this table every week. We do a huddle. And so I get really on the ground information on what the stats look like, what data looks like, what our community case numbers look like. And they're also working with Dr. Levine at the state. So they have a state insight on what the vaccine rollout is going to look like. So from that table, I learned that the vaccine rollout was going to look like a summer, late summer, early fall was the prediction when I was writing this. And so that's how I got to that October date, because having a vaccine is one thing. A vaccine is not any good until you actually are vaccinated. And we have millions of people to vaccinate, and that's not going to be done overnight. So we want to make sure we're giving, even though the vaccine may be available as soon as next month, that doesn't mean all 1.2 million people in this county will receive that by the end of this year. So we want to make sure that folks have enough time and have access to the vaccination, to get the vaccination if they choose to get the vaccination, before they are, you know, hammered with all these responsibilities, rent, and all the things that would, you know, ordinarily be responsibilities in non-pandemic times.
I tell you, just between the fact that it's a pandemic, the fact that we've only had one stimulus check, to the fact that people literally have a fear of no longer having a roof over their head because they lost a job, because, you know, someone got sick, maybe they lost an income in the household. I mean, there's a number of things that could have happened to just make situations really difficult for families. And I'm glad to know that, one, the moratorium passed, but two, that it went to October. That's what happens when you have conversations, when you do have your ear to the ground, when you're talking to people at different levels, to knowing what are we up against. Like, we don't have to just, you know, throw something in the air and figure out where, you know, wherever it lands, like we have the capability to do our part. So that's such a good update to have. And then, you know, we'll keep seeing what things look like. Hopefully with the transition in the federal level, we'll see a little bit more organization. Yeah. But
I saw that that was in his first 100-day plan, so I'm excited about that because it's really needed. Like other countries who have, I don't know, maybe I'm a nerd, but I pay attention. Like I just do. But other countries that have successfully mitigated the virus have really done a long game strategy. They didn't do like, oh, we're going to throw this $1,200 check out there.
Little band-aid on it.
Right. They actually had a plan that sustained their people for 4 to 6 months so that they could then ask their people to stay home and hunker down. When people feel secure and they feel taken care of, then it lends to them more listening to the guidances and staying home and doing these things. When they don't feel like they're being taken care of and secure, then they're making very desperate decisions. And that's what I see when I see folks that are going against orders and trying to argue business over people. It's not that they don't care necessarily, it's that they have a livelihood that they don't know how it's going to be sustained because there's no help coming from anywhere. Right. So I can't blame them. I mean, sometimes I do, but I have to have these self-talks to myself, you know. But
we've all had those talks, I think.
I know, but I mean, it's really like when you really dig down and really list, you know, dig past the, oh, you're such an idiot, and how can you, you know, people are dying, don't you care? When you dig down and you really see the vulnerability and you really see what their fears are, it gives you a better level of understanding on why they're operating the way that they are. And I can't blame them. I can't blame somebody for wanting to know. They have some security and know where their next meal is coming from, where their next mortgage payment is coming from, where their next car payment is coming from, because I understand it. So
yeah, it's not even, actually, you said it's putting a Band-Aid on it. It was taking a handful of Band-Aids and throwing them up in the air and hoping one of them might stick.
Hope you caught it, right?
You're giving too much credit that there was a plan in place to put a Band-Aid on something.
That's true.
And I so much expect more of our government, especially our higher government officials. It's like this pandemic is really shown the necessity for local government, because if it wasn't for a local government, I don't know where we would be. But I also wanted to note that our motion is just a motion. Because county council does not have authority to do an eviction moratorium, we cannot compel. That's something that has to come through the courts. We only have authority to compel the courts to do that. So that's why it was a motion. It wasn't something stronger than a motion, because we don't have the authority to do something in that regard. But we can always, you know, put a sense of counsel, which is basically what a motion is, saying, this is what council believes. We all agree on this. We think something needs to happen, and boom. So but that's another thing that Bethany and I are really trying to push to our council members. Like, when we have authority to do something, we should be doing it.
Yeah.
Not pontificating, not, you know, well, ideology and, you know, I don't know. Like, we should really be courageous and make the change that needs to be made to make our county livable for all.
Well, you know, that's why we've elected folks like yourself and Bethany, because it's super important, you know. And as we have this conversation, you know, there's a lot of things actually that you all are beginning to move this conversation on. And the next thing that I want to dive into is the Independent Police Review Board and the conversation of that happening at the county level, because this has been a conversation for quite some time. I mean, even my own dad has been doing a lot of work and advocacy in making this something that they put pressure on county council to do. So can you tell us a little bit about that? And I know there's some differences because there were previous legislations put forth. And so this one, you know, you're doing things a little differently.
Yeah. So really our legislation is really has really been foundationed through, if that's a word, I might have just made that up, sorry. But
it is now.
It really got its origins and its foundation from the original legislation that was introduced in 2018. In 2018, legislation was introduced to do a countywide independent police review board. And I'm sure you guys know the history, but just to go through it really quick for the person who may not, Johnny Gamage happened in the 90s, happened in Brentwood. He was murdered. Ray Sills was a stealer. Johnny Gamage was in his car driving in Brentwood, got stopped by police and ended up dead. Out of that came a call for the police review board. The city of Pittsburgh did a police review board, but that was it. Nothing ever happened at the county. And if you know the city of Pittsburgh and Allegheny County, Brentwood is not in the city of Pittsburgh. So out of Johnny Gamage, we got a police review board in the city of Pittsburgh, but it did absolutely nothing to answer to or to circumvent or to try to ward off another Johnny Gamage. So fast forward, we've seen many Johnny Gamages since Johnny Gamages. We've seen Mark Daniels. We've seen Leon Ford, who fortunately lived through his police encounter. We've seen Antoine Rose. We've seen Romare Talley. So obvious, and all of those except for Mark Daniels and Leon Ford are in the county. They are not in the city. Mm-hmm. Romare happened in Wilkinsburg. Antoine happened in East Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. So again, we have these police encounters that are happening in the greater parts of our county, but we don't have a body that actually comes in and has a way of kind of a checks and balance like the city does. So that is what we're trying to do and erect at the county for the 100+ police departments that exist in Allegheny County. So some of the things that were changed from the original legislation to this new legislation is, one, we added an ombudsman. And just for quick and dirty, I mean, we could share legislation, it's about 20 something pages, but I'm trying not to get that long-winded, but originally what was introduced was just the Civilian Police Review Board, basically a body where citizens would be appointed onto a board, and when questionable police encounters happen to citizens or civilians, they would have this board to go to if that department participates. Because remember, in Allegheny County, we can't make any department participate except for Allegheny County Police and possibly our county sheriffs. So every other department would have to opt in. So for a department that would opt in, that board would be there to take the complaint and walk through the whole investigation or whatever around the circumstance of that police encounter. So what happens with that department if this happens and that department where this happens has not opted in? What happens? So that's where the ombudsman idea came in. Beth Pittinger was nice enough to, she actually presented the board idea and then she came back and presented the ombudsman as two separate models. But as I was researching, I've seen that they've actually done hybrids of this and they are quite successful. So we came up with the idea of making it kind of a hybrid, make the board with the ombudsman being kind of the liaison for departments who aren't participating, but still give a place for a person who had a questionable police encounter, a place to come and report. Because again, we're trying to service the whole county and not making that contingent upon whether or not municipalities decide to participate. So that was one major change that happened in the new legislation, as well as taking away 1/3 of the seats from the county executive. That was another major change that happened. So the original bill gave the executive, this will be a 9-body board, and it gave the executive 3 seats. So we took away 3 seats and we're now giving him 1, giving the president of council a seat, giving chair of public safety a seat. Those seats would rotate for 2 years because, as I discussed with y'all earlier, we do reorg every 2 years. So therefore, that public safety chair could change and the president could change. So therefore that person who they appointed would not, would be up for removal or replacement when that new person, if a new person came on, if they did not want to use that same person. So still giving the autonomy to the person whose authority to seat that person, when their time was up. And then the rest of that body would be seated by members of council. So it was really an effort to give back the power to council and give more of a, because there, again, there's 15 members of council and you're talking about one executive. So we want to really make this more of a place or a body where more voices are going to be into who's being on those board than just one. So that was the other major change. And then we just really went into detail on what the diversity of the body should look like, such as, and this came from the community. So returning citizens was a suggestion that we included. Immigrant population, which we noted as naturalized citizens, but we want to make sure that we're really disabled population. So we really want to really target populations to be on this board that have the most questionable interactions with police. So those should be the people that are having a voice on the board, and folks from the LGBTQIA community was the other one that we included. So those were the major changes that were made. I'm going to be having a committee meeting on December 8th. And in that meeting, I've already asked for my co-counselors to come with their amendments to that meeting. So they should be working with our policy personnel to do those amendments. And then those amendments will be introduced at the meeting on the 8th, be voted up or down. And hopefully we can get it back up to full council on the 15th for a vote.
I know you're saying before we started recording, that's a lot to take in. I told you this was going to be a masterclass. I wasn't mm-hmm. lying. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you said before we started recording was this sort of the inclusivity of the process. So there's more transparency you're getting people about. So if you could talk a little bit about that, and then I won't even call it a two-part question because this is actually really a separate question. But one of the things, you know, that we've seen with police review boards, you know, even with there was the ballot initiative for the one in the city, and we moved the ball forward ever so slightly, like, on paper, it sounds great. Like, how can you ensure, and maybe you can't, maybe this is all that you can do as a county council, that review board has any teeth whatsoever in terms of enacting any kind of real change?
Well, I'm gonna go with your first question first, your last question first. I don't think this is a one and done. Maybe when I initially came and walked into this, I'm like, okay, yeah, we're going to do this legislation, we're going to get it perfect, and then we're going to not, that's no longer what I feel like is realistic. I think we're going to be kind of like what I said about the hair ordinance, where we had legislation and it was amended to add. I think that's what we're going to be looking at with the police review board as we start walking this out and formulating what we want to see in the county with this police review board. We're going to see amendments, we're going to see, oh, well, maybe this was the vision and this is what we thought and this is how we thought it was going to work, but in practice, it doesn't work this way. So what do we need to do to get what we want to get out of this? I see that being a very, this is just the beginning. Us getting it passed is the first step. Getting it actually to be a thing is going to be a whole different step in project. So I'm fully aware of that, and I'm fully willing and able and excited to do the work that is going to be down the pike as we do this. I mean, we were just talking today, like, once we get this passed, again, police departments have to opt in. So we'll be like having to do another listening tour throughout the county with areas that have police departments to sell it, right? So yeah. This is not a one and done. Mm-hmm. This is just the beginning of this process. And yes, this process is very different from how it was done in 2018 and 2019. I'm sure a lot of y'all remember it coming up for a vote in 2019 and it failing. And part of the reason it did is because they weren't allowing for amendments. They weren't allowing for other voices. Whatever they presented, that's what they were going to go with, either take it or leave it. And I approached it very differently. I actually did listening sessions through the community. A lot of the things that you see that are changed in this new legislation came from the community. Everything that you see changed in this legislation came from the community or a fellow council member. None of these changes came from LIV. So these are things that I've heard people's voices on and put it into the legislation, because after all, I ran on the ability and desire to co-govern. And how do you co-govern if you don't include other people's voices? So I also don't understand how you ever expect to get anything passed if you don't include other people's voices. So it doesn't ever seem like a winning strategy to me. And so I don't go into things wasting energy and doing the same thing, expecting different results. So they did their way 2018, 2019, and we still are having this conversation in 2020. So obviously their way did not work. So we're going to try another way.
Yeah. I mean, that's that. It's one of those moments like, well, that's that on that, you know, because it's the consistent wheel turning. At some point it's like, all right, what are you doing? So this was really good information. And, you know, will you come back so we can talk about this a little bit more? Like you said, with all the amendments that are going to be happening and, you know, as more insight comes in, you know, I think this is a conversation that we clearly have to continue having, and especially for us as Unite with our focus on criminal justice. You know, this is really important. This is how we try to create the accountability that we know we need to have when it comes to our law enforcement. So we just as Unite members, as, you know, Ashley and Jonathan,
citizens of the county.
Yeah. Like, we thank you for this work, because it is the type of work that people don't see. People don't get to know all that behind the scene work that has to happen to get this type of work and this type of legislation passed for it to be effective. Because, you know, people love to just do something to say they did it, and that's not what I feel like we're listening to right now. So that's the type of work that we need to keep happening, and we got to keep the pressure on county council, y'all, so we can make sure that we continue to have more more in-depth conversation, but also a diverse background and understanding of why all these things need to happen, because it affects everyone, whether they want to admit it or not, you know? I'm excited to, you know, despite all the things we're going through, I'm excited to know this work is happening. And, you know, I think every episode, there's always something that we get to learn on how this stuff is working. So, yeah, and I didn't even think about this, Jonathan. Do we know what episode number we're on? Is this 20?
I think we're 11.
Oh, I said 20. Wrong podcast.
20.
Wrong podcast. You're right. It's 11. So
it's just because Liv, time spent with me, you feel like you're there twice as long as you actually are. It's
good time. Y'all
should have waited for me to do and been on 13, District 13.
Oh, see?
Oh, I like that. Maybe that's the time we need to bring you back.
Yeah, it's all about Brandon, right?
Oh, and 13 is my number because my birthday is on the 13th. So
it's mine.
Oh, yeah, it is coming up. You're a day before my daughter.
No, not December. I'm a September baby. I'm not a
September. Why did I think somebody is a day before my daughter?
Mine's in January.
Yes. So
January baby, Jonathan.
What's that?
You're a January baby.
I'm a January baby. Yep.
Beginning or end?
I've got a big one coming up too, but we'll talk about that another time.
Yeah, he's the 13th too.
Yep. January 13th.
Okay. Look at our connection. We just connected on something.
There you go.
Well, I'm a Juneteenth baby. So I was always born thinking my birthday should be a holiday. Now I made it a thing.
See, that's what it is. Well, so, you know, for Unite, make sure you all, you know, keep up with us. We are on Anchor, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts now.
Yep.
Also, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Unite. You know, we are across all platforms, Unite. And then, Jonathan, I always forget our email. What is that email?
UnitePodcast@gmail.com.
It's so easy, too. Look at me.
It is.
Overthinking. That's what it is. But yeah, thank you so much, Liv. This was a great episode. Do you want to also share for folks how they can keep in touch with you, where to follow you at?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I have a Liv Bennett County Council page. I have a Liv Bennett campaign page. And Olivia Bennett is my personal page. And you can reach me at my county email. Please don't inbox me.
Hey, you got to set those boundaries.
Just saying. So my county email is Olivia.Bennett, B-E-N-N-E-T-T, at AlleghenyCounty.us. And then my cell phone, which I never remember, so I'm picking up a card, is 412-779-4231. So feel free to reach out to me in any one of those ways, and I'm always happy to have a conversation with you.
I like that. Now that's elected official right that there. Wants to be accessible mm-hmm. and is here for you. So thank you so much, Liv. Jonathan.
Thanks, Gugafs, for having me and having this great conversation.
This was better than the first time in my head.
I'm glad I've exceeded expectations.
You have, and they were high. I mean, I set the completely fabricated bar very, very high.
It was natural.
I appreciate you both.
Thanks. You all have a good one, and we'll catch you on our next episode.
Bye.